Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively moving into September, and finally the fake football is over, and Luke and I have gone back and forth. You can find it all out in our podcast audio vault or out on YouTube or at WNST and BaltimorePositive.com in regard to the Dobbins injury and its ramifications, and they are extensive, and we spent a half an hour about that. But Luke, as I pointed out, that John Harbaugh doesn't lose preseason games, one. And then there's the defense, which is the reason John Harbaugh doesn't lose preseason games, right?
And that's really what we're talking about here. And I'll take a moment to praise Tyler Huntley. He was fantastic on Saturday night. That's one thing. If you want to talk about, you know, we could talk about not playing your starters and J.K. Dobbins and, you know, not putting Lamar Jackson out there or whoever you want to. Tyler Huntley, those preseason games mattered for him. And you saw how much better he got from game one to game two to game three where, and I get it, Washington didn't put their starters out there on defense. And I want to be clear about that, but.
Well, good. Go scorch them.
Yeah. You know? And that's what he did. I mean, he looked as good as Lamar looks at his best throwing the football, and that's saying something. So that was good to see, but this 20 game preseason winning streak, which I'm glad after this conversation, you and I don't have to bring this up again until next August. Cause it doesn't matter. I mean, it doesn't. It's fun, but it doesn't really matter.
Memes and stuff, and the stuff that these teams do on social.
Yeah, it's just
it's panderous. Like, but, I mean, especially when you're a last place baseball team, which is a whole different story. But yeah. It's just sort of like, oh yeah. God, it's preseason I hear people. I was out on the golf course Sunday. People were talking about Harbaugh's a winner, and I'm like, all right. Even John would laugh at that. And
I mean,
John takes himself pretty seriously. He would laugh at that.
Well, John has proven he's a winner, but it's not because of preseason games. It's because they make the playoffs and he's won a Super Bowl in his career and all that. But I will say this, the 20 game preseason winning streak has been a byproduct of having superb defensive depth. If you look at the theme of these games, go back and look, even games where Ryan Mallett started 4 or 5 years ago and, you know, Josh Woodrum and guys like that were, you know, heroes late in games and things of that nature. Their second and third team defensive players have consistently been not just better, but markedly better than the second and third team offensive players for their opponents. Look at the second half of these games, and generally that's where you see the domination. Now, Saturday night, that was domination on both sides of the ball. They dominated them from, you know, what, the second drive of the game all the way through.
Say, as just to, you know, to invoke this every 4 years and me running around Western Maryland with these Steeler fans running around Frederick and Hagerstown. Dude, everywhere I went in Southern Maryland had a hail sign, even on the Eastern Shore, Cambridge and whatnot. I saw some of that over there. So I'm not subjected to that because I don't run around much. I don't go to Caps games. Maybe I'll be at the Eagles concert on Wednesday night, seeing it a little bit. But the people wearing burgundy and gold, they've gone into witness protection, if you haven't noticed, in the last couple of years. And I would say this. I was in a Frederick bar watching it. Still really gets me pissed off a little bit. You know, when I see it out there and I see their little uniforms and I see the colors and I saw the stadium and I see the empty seats. And I even, like, got into a little bit of a conversation with someone over the weekend, you can imagine, about that waiting list they had with the Redskins back in the day. And you know, and how, because somebody said to me, like, what, because they don't know, what's the deal with why do you take the Ravens, Redskins? Why can't we all just get along? And I'm like, tried to never have a team here, you know? And by the way, to plug Luke Maryland, which I did in the last segment, Western Port, we took a road out to it through a town called Cressip Town. And there's a wonderful creamery there called Livy's Creamery. Top 10 in the state, milkshakes. I mean, it's right up there with your Hershey's milkshake thing up there, Luke, at the Dead and Company concert. So we came back through Hancock, Maryland. Now, I've been to Hancock, Maryland before, and I didn't realize it's only a mile that separates Yinzanot, north of the border, where you call home in Pennsylvania, and then there's West Virginia on the south side of it, right? So there's 1 mile there, and in that 1 mile, there is a place called Buddy Lou's Antiques. And I went into Buddy Lou's, and Buddy Lou's got beer, delicious food, like all this stuff, and I wasn't hungry because we had already had said dairy product. We had the Dumb Blonde, which was this butterscotch blondie and this caramel sauce with the wet nut. I mean, I couldn't eat. But I went into the basement, and it was like a light to me, okay? Like, it, I don't know why I went to this area, but there it was. John Steadman's book on the 1958 Colts, including the front page where he tells his wife, Mary Lee, how much he loved her. This is 1959. I looked at the copyright. It was 10 bucks. I should have bought the book. But I saw it, and I thought it was like a message from Steadman talking to me, you know. And so that was literally the day that I saw the game. It was Friday. We're coming through. So the Redskin Baltimore thing, we don't get much of that. But to look up and see Baltimore 37, Washington 3, when I got home on Friday night, like third quarter, I thought about the Nationals winning the World Series and got a little salty. You know what I mean? Like, I whatever it takes to get me a little angry with them, I try to do, even though they're down and I don't want to kick them too much. But, dude, they're the Washington football team. I don't – beating them at Jack's, I'd be hopscotch, I'd be okay with. I just want to point that out, that hasn't left me. I got pissed at the Colts last week. There was like something with the mascot in their place in the horseshoe rubbed me wrong for a minute. So it is that season, you know, where you get football feelings again, and nothing brings that out like kicking the Redskins' ass on a Friday night.
Yeah, no question about it. And really, I mean, there's absolutely some of that, although it's not, I mean, it's not nearly as much as for a regular season game, which to your point is once every 4 years. But I think you just go back to the defensive dominance on Saturday night, that, you know, you had a team that played really, I mean, fantastic football in the second half of the Carolina game. Again, backups. I'm talking about backups here. Everyone knows that. You know, Marcus Peters played one series. The veteran defensive line played one series. I mean, yeah, that's, we understand that, but backups matter, and we've seen that. We see backups playing in December, backups playing in January many years, because we just know that the game is a game of injuries and attrition. So, but you know, after what Carolina forcing 5-3 and outs in the second half down in Charlotte the previous week, they give up 3 points. Washington was 1 of 11 on third down. I mean, this was an excellent defensive performance, and again, it really speaks to the depth that they have mostly in the secondary, but you know, their backups at other spots, quality as well, but they just have so many options. And now
let's
we get into
about the deal. Let's talk about a trade, because we talk about trying to trade kickers and punters and fleece other teams and fortify second and third day draft picks, whether it's signing some pass rusher you keep for a week and a half and you project they're going to get a fourth round sandwich pick, sub pick for him. But then they wind up drafting a kid that they don't have a use for and turn him loose to Belichick and wind up get more picks. I mean, this is the deafness of the organization, that these things are quiet. They go on. You write about them because you're nerded up. But this is how they win. This is how they get better, when they use every part of the cow, right? They cook the eyeballs if they use every part, every asset they have.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think this was a dramatically fantastic deal or something like that. Look, they drafted Sean Wade, who was really, really good at Ohio State in 2019 in the nickel. He in 2020, and understanding was a weird pandemic year for all those guys, you know, especially in the Big Ten, thinking they weren't going to play. Then they did play. He struggled, and he played outside corner, and he struggled. And he went from being a potential first or second round pick to falling to the fifth round. Now he comes in. We have talked a lot about how much talent they have in their secondary, and that holds true. But I'll also say this, Nestor, if they really liked what they saw from Sean Wade, he'd still be a Baltimore Raven. They would have made it work. You know, someone would have gotten the IR treatment, or someone would have been passed through waivers at some sneaky time, or they didn't like what they saw. They didn't love the player. So instead of holding on to him for a couple years and then cutting him, or cutting him next year, New England afforded them an opportunity to say, okay, we will give you a fifth round pick. It's in 2023. So again, you're not doing cartwheels over it, but it does give you a long-term mulligan. And then they give you a seventh round pick, which, seventh round picks, you know what seventh round picks are in trades. It's the courtesy pick you're thrown for that team to to bypass the waiver order.
I mean, that's Bill Belichick will not be making the draft picks in
right
in 23, right? Like,
well,
that's part, but Eric DaCosta will.
sure. But I mean, it really came down to it. Gave you a chance for a mulligan. You didn't get fantastic value. I mean, fifth round picks, more often than not, yes, some of them are really good. And then you have other guys like Sean Wade, who you didn't really like, and you were very possibly going to cut him. So yeah, you got something for him. You didn't buy into a sunk cost fallacy and you move on. So do I think that that's going to net them something amazing down the line? Probably not. But to your point, it is about finding those little possibilities of a deal here or there that can help you. Look at the deal they made on Saturday with the Miami Dolphins. Greg Mantz, a reserve offensive lineman who was not even on the bubble for this roster. He was a long shot. They trade him to Miami. They trade that seventh round pick they got from the Patriots. And guess what? They got a sixth round pick in return. Now, sixth round pick, yes, I know it could be Adalys Thomas, but we know more often than not it's going to be some guy you forget about. But hey, it's a lottery ticket for a guy that you had no interest in keeping. So again, do I think that that's going to put them over the hump one day? No, of course not. Do I think that that is a reflection of doing your due diligence, which is something that the best organizations do? Absolutely. So yeah, you make these small trades. We'll see what happens, you know, with Jake Verity, the kicker, although he missed the 40-yard field goal on Saturday night. So, you know, maybe the shine's off the apple a little bit there. But yeah, I mean, Eric DaCosta has shown over the last few years, you know, we've talked a lot about the willingness to draft receivers, which has clearly been a pivot from where the organization had been prior, which, you know, is always interesting because Eric was part of the decision making. It's not as though he's some brand new guy, but yeah, they've evolved a little bit in that way. And we've seen him not hesitate to make some of these trades. Remember a couple years ago, they traded Jermaine Illuminor to the Patriots during the preseason. So you know, you have some of that. And more often than not, it ends up not being all that terribly consequential.
They haven't let go of a whole lot of guys that ever showed up on a field. John Simon played a little bit, you know, the crazy quarterback 20 years ago that played 5 minutes for the Browns.
Oh, Derek Anderson. Yeah.
I mean, I
yeah, I mean, there's some, but not many
guys that slipped that. Oh, well, yeah. The greatest case would be the tight end in Las Vegas, right? Darren Waller,
which
would be the one guy that, you mentioned Priest Holmes earlier. We knew he could play, right? I think that's a little different than getting rid of somebody before they make it on the field. Well, James Harrison was also a guy a million years ago, too.
Sure. I mean, you mentioned Darren Waller. I mean, he'd flat out tell you he was a drug addict while he was here. I mean, he was. I mean, that's why he's been such a fantastic story for the Raiders. But yeah, I mean, it comes down to this. A couple players that you had no plans on wanting. I mean, if they couldn't have traded Wade, is there a chance he might have stuck, especially if, you know, if Chris Westry gets hurt on Saturday night or you know, Geno Stone gets hurt on Saturday night or someone like that? Sure, there was a chance, but it was clear they didn't love the player. They hadn't really been that impressed. I mean, if you've been following my 12 Ravens thoughts at BaltimorePositive.com, I've mentioned on a couple occasions, Sean Wade hasn't really stood out in the way that Chris Westry, who was a reserve future signing from the Cowboys practice squad back in January, has stood out. You would have actually thought Westry was the fifth round pick and Wade was the guy that was undrafted and kind of just, you know, looking like a camp body more so than someone that you were really excited about. So it happens. You know, you're not going to bat 1,000 with these picks, but the good teams find a way to say, look at something that could be a loss. And not that if you cut a fifth round pick, it's not the end of the world, but you'd rather not do it, right? So you get something in return. Yeah, it's a fifth round pick 2 years down the line. So you'll kind of forget about it and see who they take. If it ends up being the next Matt Judon, then great. You know, I mean, then you look at that and say that was great. And if it ends up being another Sean Wade type, well, then you're no worse for wear. So I think it's fine. And again, doing your due diligence and exploring opportunities. And I don't think it's something you want to spend too much time on, those kind of that minutia, those smaller deals. But if the opportunity comes across your table and it makes sense for you, yeah, why not? Gives him a chance to go to New England and, you know, play for a good coaching staff there, and he'll learn from some really good defensive backs in that secondary. And there's some talk whether Wade's going to be a nickel corner. Maybe he becomes a safety. You know, who knows? Maybe he'll be a better fit there. And we know this. Wink Martindale will be the first to tell you, and Wink has been so successful as defensive coordinator, but they have very specific players and very specific traits they're looking for certain positions. So a guy that might be a really good defensive player in another system might not fit here, and vice versa. You might have some players for the Ravens. We've seen that. I mean, think of all the guys that Ray Lewis got paid over the years because they were a great fit here, and Ray got them to buy into what they needed to do as far as their role in the defense. And well, then they go somewhere else and they get paid, and good for them. But then you never really hear about them again from a football standpoint. So that happens.
You Sean Wade, Danelle Ellerbe, is that what you're?
Or Ed Hartwell, or any number of guys. But you know, in the case of Sean Wade, it didn't look like it was going to work out. And who knows if he becomes a Pro Bowl defensive back for the Patriots? Then yeah, we'll say the Ravens whiffed on that one. But I'm guessing it'll work out fine for both teams, in the sense that Wade will be a depth guy for the Patriots, and we'll see how he develops over the next couple of years. Maybe he becomes an okay player. And in the case of the Ravens, a fifth round pick that clearly they weren't excited about after the spring and the summer, they get that mulligan 2 years from now. And hey, you get that, you know, that seventh round pick, you throw it in there, you know, I mean, whatever. But hey, they even flipped that and upgraded it to a sixth round pick with an offensive lineman they were going to cut in a few days. So good for them.
Luke Jones joining us here. He'll have all sorts of picks to click as we get ready to go to Las Vegas next week. Luke, just break down for me, because I think we're all unfamiliar with this 2 week period and not playing this crazy fourth game nobody played anyway, which may be a great reason to not have that happening this Thursday night to waste our time or our money. Some thoughts about these 2 weeks. This is an important couple of weeks for the Ravens. I specifically for the Ravens, in having not gotten a full complement of players out on the field to feel their way through injuries, continuity, wide receivers, all of that.
No question about it. And, you know, as much as we've kind of focused on the defense in our conversation now, I think it's going to be wildly important for the offense. Get these wide receivers back on the field, get them reps with Lamar Jackson, get everyone healthy. You know, let's remember that as well. I mean, these guys have been at it since late July. So, you know, you definitely have some tired legs, and definitely observed that last week, you know, with the heat and Owings Mills last week. I mean, you know, I've been doing this for a minute now. It was the last week or two, brutal in terms of the heat and the humidity. And anyone who's been in Baltimore over the last couple of weeks knows that.
But these guys, Wednesday or Thursday or Friday.
Yeah, right. But these guys, you know, it was a grind for them last week. So I think now you don't have to get ready for, as you mentioned, you don't have that fourth fake football game. You do your roster cuts Tuesday, 4 p.m. is the deadline, and you'll have your initial 53-man roster set. And then guess what? It'll change, because I'm guessing they're going to put a couple guys on short-term IR. Rashad Bateman kind of being at the top of the list of what I suspect. Because keep in mind, they've kept the same rule from last year. The IR, you can come back after 3 weeks, after three games. So that kind of puts him in that timeline of being back at the end of September, early October. You know, we'll see what happens with Nick Boyle, as we know, has not practiced to this point. Being on the PUP list, I'm guessing he's not going to miss the first 6 weeks, but do you activate him and put him on short-term IR with the thought that he's back by week four? I don't know. You know, I'm just speculating at this point. We'll have these answers, and good reason to be on the WNST Baltimore Positive Text Service, sponsored by Coons Baltimore Ford, as we'll get the notable cuts out to you. We won't talk about the back end of the roster guys that you haven't heard of, but certainly the notable names we'll send out to you, as we did with the Sean Wade trade, for example. And certainly the unfortunate J.K. Dobbins injury news. But you know, all those decisions, they'll set their roster. They'll wait. You know, they'll put any short-term injured reserve guys on that they know they can bring back then after 3 weeks. And you'll see what else is out there. I think not that their running game is going to change dramatically with the Dobbins injury, but it's going to change some. And, you know, Greg Roman's going to look at what he has now. Eric DaCosta is going to look and see what running backs are out there. I think pass protection is something to mention in terms of some consideration there. If there's a wide receiver or if there's a running back out there with some receiver skills out of the backfield, knowing that Dobbins had kind of been identified as being that guy to do that for them this year in a higher capacity. So yeah, there's certainly a veteran that could be out there that's brought in. So you got to figure that out. But really for me, it's this offensive line gelling and this group of wide receivers getting back on the field. And just starting to stack some reps, stack some days. I mean, we've talked so much. We talked about this passing games from the moment Buffalo ended their postseason last January. And it's really been in a holding pattern. And I say that with no disrespect to James Prochet or Mark Andrews, who's looked like Mark Andrews, or Josh Oliver, who I think is going to be the number three tight end. We've seen him do some decent things in the preseason, but you know, you need to get Marquise Brown out there. You need to get Sammy Watkins back out there. You hope to get Rashad Bateman back out there before too long, that, you know, hopefully he's in the mix by the middle of the season. So, you know, it's getting to be that time to go. And as you mentioned, you do have that extra week. So, you know, you've got a little bit of extra time here to take advantage of, and you don't have to worry about the nuisance of the fourth preseason game, but they've got a lot of work to do. And on the defensive side of the ball, it's more so a matter of sorting out who exactly you're going to keep, who exactly you're going to try to get back. If there's a couple of those veterans that, you know, they do those crafty release and re-sign like they did with Justin Forsett a few years back. I'm guessing we're going to see a couple of those, whether it's an Anthony Levine, you know, someone of that, Justin Ellis, maybe vested veterans.
To you. We just don't want to be on the hook for the salary cap.
Well, or it's even a case of you need to, anyone that you put on injured reserve that you want to bring back, they have to be on the initial 53-man roster. So if Bateman, they want to put on IR, you don't want to put him on IR before the 53 is set, because then he's lost for the year. So you got to carry him initially. So that's where you say to Anthony Levine, for example, hey, co-cap, you know, you're our guy. You're still our guy. We'll bring you back. Can we release you? And, you know, handshake agreement here. We're going to bring you back tomorrow when we put this guy on IR that we want to be able to get back later in the season. So there'll be a couple moves like that, and we'll see how that plays out. Trace McSorley conceivably could be a guy like that if they want to keep him around, but you know, we'll see it. To me, the Bateman feels like the most logical one. And then we'll have to see about, you know, maybe Miles Boykin fits into that description. I mean, he's been out all camp or since the first week of camp. So they've got some guys in that category, but again, you need some flexibility. So that's where you do go to a couple vested vets who, you know, are kind of bubble guys anyway, and say, hey, help us out here. Help us get this guy on the IR and then we'll bring you back. And most of the time guys are amenable to doing that, you know, if they trust the organization, which the Ravens have built up that trust, and players are going to be more willing to play ball with a team like the Ravens, an organization like the Ravens in that way. So some decisions to be made here, but once that's set, once that's the roster's allowed to breathe a little bit, clearly all eyes will be on the Las Vegas Raiders and getting ready for Monday Night Football in 2 weeks.
Yeah, you know, I'm getting my COVID test. I'm all ready to go. Luke Jones is here. You can find him, Baltimore Luke. You could have found me at the BMW. You could find me with Governor Larry Hogan on Monday. You could certainly find me anywhere, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. If you want to find Luke, you got to find him on the fields at Owings Mills. You want to say anything about the baseball team? You just want to let that – before we – I see the look. Let everybody see the look of frustration on your –
a month ago, right? Hey.
All right, there you go. So hey, it's football season.
But you know what? Jay Tibbs and Jeff Stone and all those guys from the 1988 Orioles, they got to crack open the champagne and the 21-game losing streak was safe. So they got that going for them. But how about the fact that the Tampa Bay Rays, I mean, the season series is over. The Orioles won one game against the Tampa Bay Rays, which... even by these recent Orioles standards, I mean, it's like Ron Burgundy in Anchorman. You ate the entire wheel of cheese. I'm not even mad. I'm impressed. I mean, like, that's
put the game on the other night, and like John Means is like, it's the seventh inning and they're winning 3-0. And I said to my wife, I'm like, Means must be pitching. And she was, and then 10 seconds later, it's 3-2. And then, you know, it's a slippery slope. I mean, they have one major league pitcher, one pitcher is what they have, literally.
Yeah. I mean, it's there's not a whole lot on the pitching side, especially. I mean, you know, on the hitting side, I mean, Mullins has continued to be he's been a legitimate all-star great player in the league. He's the most valuable Oriole this year. Mountcastle, we've talked about it since May. He's had a really nice season at the plate. And, you know, Ramon Urias, someone we haven't talked about, go look at his numbers. He's done a nice job for them as a middle infielder. You know, I don't know if he's a long-term solution, but, hey, he's at least kind of, I don't know, filled the void of part Hanser Alberto, part Jose Iglesias. I don't know, like something like that, you know. But he's done a nice job. So, you know, they've had, you know, Trey Mancini, not the year he had 2 years ago, but I mean, Trey's been, continues to be a great story, but the pitching, whew, not a whole lot to write home about. I mean, Keegan Aiken was pretty good in his last start, but that was after a long line of terrible starts. So yeah, there's not a whole lot about that. The only thing you could point to is what? Baseball America, number two farm system in baseball, according to them. MLB.com, their pipeline website, I think has them at number one. So the talent down below is doing well. That's good to see. But boy, if you are watching the Orioles on a regular basis right now, one, I guess I commend you, I guess, if your loyalty is that high. But I would also say, what are you doing with your life in some ways? Because it is just painful to watch. It really is. But you hope, you know, these are the moments, you know, when they finally snap the losing streak late last week. You know, you look at that and say, okay, these are the moments you try to remember when hopefully 2, 3, 4 years from now, they're, you know, they're at this time of year, they're in contention. And you know, in the same way you think back to the Robert Andino Red Sox thing in 2011, how that kind of sparked the Orioles, with the Showalter Duquette era. But it is a chore to watch on many of those nights. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, I was out in Frederick the other, by the way, Frederick's a great town. Like mm-hmm. We really had a good time in Frederick. I didn't realize how nice Frederick was. We had a great meal. I'll always remember it was where J.K. Dobbins ripped his knee up. And if the Ravens don't win the Super Bowl, I'll blame that. But I would just, you know, these towns losing baseball. We were in Hagerstown the other night, yeah, which is far bigger than I realize as a town, right? I just, when I think of Frederick, I think of Hagerstown, I think of Salisbury, I think of reasons I went there and never been to Cambridge or Easton, probably because they had a baseball team with the Suns and the Keys and the Shorebirds. So just even Bluefield, when I crossed the West Virginia border because Dan Roderick's made me, although I told him we weren't catching any West Virginia fish, only Maryland fish. So, by the way, did you know there was a Luke Maryland, or did you find out when I told you?
That was news to me.
There
that
are 50 residents me, so. In Luke, Maryland. I looked it up, but there were probably...
Are they all named Luke?
The force was with them. I probably on the Maryland side. But I just thought it was a message when I pulled into town. And then the next day, Roger's like, yeah, I want you to meet me in Westernport. I'm like, that's right next to Luke. I was there yesterday. By the way, Luke, how about this? You ready for this? We're driving down the road south toward the Savage River. Okay. Here, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to Google map this again so everybody can see if they're actually out watching on our YouTube channel. And so I'm driving down this road here, the road right by Luke. All right. So this is literally Route 36, my favorite number, by the way, and the number I wore in the Berkshire Little League. And we went through a couple of these towns here. This town here, Lonoconing. Are you familiar with Lonoconing, Maryland?
I can't say that I am.
All right. Well, you are a baseball historian. I know you've watched the Ken Burns series many, many times. So we're driving through Lonoconing on a sunny day. And I got I'm trying to get internet. You can't get internet anywhere. It's Maryland. The internet sucks. I'll be talking to the governor about that. So I'm driving through Lonoconing. And my wife says, there's a lefty something. She didn't know what it was. She's like, some baseball thing. And I looked up. I'm like, what are you talking about? And I see Lefty's Corner Bar. And I said, turn around. I want to turn around. And as we drove through this little town, dude, there is this beautiful, beautiful park right here. I think you can see this. The Lefty Grove Memorial Park. Okay. Yeah. So this is a real thing. And I took a picture here out on my Facebook. This is Lefty Grove's hometown.
Very cool.
Lonoconing.
I knew Maryland. He was a Maryland native. I couldn't remember the name of the town.
So here I am driving for the first time in my life down Route 36, just west of just below Frostburg, west of Cumberland. And I go down and baseball follows me, Luke. It never leaves me, man. You know, so whether it's Luke Maryland or Luke Appling or Lefty Grove or Lonoconing, or anything, or little baseball parks that I pass on the way. Baseball, man. It's always baseball. It's Maryland.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Very cool, though. You know, Lefty Grove. Legend.
I didn't know. Legend. I was going to pass the Lefty Grove Park, but when I did, I'm like, stop, pull over. It was like a scene out of Smokey and the Bandit. My wife's spinning the car around. We're going back, taking selfies at Lefty Grove Park. So just one more thing to see when you're on your way out to Western Maryland, learning how to fly fish. And by the way, fly fishing was fun. More fun than like golf or some of the other things I could pick up later in life.
I haven't fished a whole lot in my life, but I have a couple friends who are very passionate about it. And, you know, they love it.
I didn't catch anything and I had a good time. It was more fun than going to an Oreo game when it's 98 degrees. I promise you that. By the way, I did love that everybody celebrated winning on Wednesday night. They beat Otani. And it was almost like that Red Sox night where you know you sort of suck and you're not any good, but you just want to have fun because you don't want to bang pots and pans just because you didn't get a chance, right?
Well, I mean, and you think back to, now, you know, certainly there weren't 45,000 people there like, 50,000 at Memorial Stadium, but you think about, fantastic fan night in 88. They're 1-23. And, feels like an eternity ago. But, the announcement of the new ballpark and at a time where the Orioles were, as lousy as they are right now. And, maybe there's no big announcement coming per se. But, you want to, as I joked with a friend that I was texting with during Wednesday night's game when they beat Otani, and I mean, it was such a weird reverse lock situation in that way. You almost kind of felt it. I mean, they had to win one again eventually, right? And I just said, you know what? Win this game and then just lose in boring fashion the rest of the way. Don't have another 14 or 18 game winning streak. Just fade out, fade to black for the 2021 season.
Luke, I wasn't even going to mention baseball, but I'm glad I did because I got to tell you about Lona Koning, Maryland.
Yeah, very cool.
Grove Memorial Park and how it made me feel to drive through Frederick and see the ballpark there and know what I took my dad there for games. My dad and I went to a Frederick Keys game when I first started driving in the late 80s. They had the team, Peter Kirk, all that when I worked at the paper. So, I took my dad to Fred. I saw a ball game there with him. My dad saw games in Hagerstown, too. He talked about it a lot. So, just seeing those cities and I asked some folks in Cumberland what's going on. They're like, we're losing population. And then I went to Frostburg and I'm like, you ever have any friends go to Frostburg?
I feel like I had maybe a couple classmates in high school who went there off the top of my head.
It is way the hell up. One thing about Frostburg, $1.25 margarita. I had $1.25 margarita. You can't beat it. Luke, rest up. We got football. We got Vegas. We got cuts. We got things happening. Luke Jones can be found. Luke at WNST.net. Baltimore Luke anywhere. That's Twitter, Facebook. You can hook it up at Baltimore Positive. And always, Mike Kemosabe and our WNST man on the scene, as brought to you by those, speaking of Western Maryland, Western Fries from Royal Farms. Chicken Palooza is over. That doesn't mean you shouldn't stop and get the chicken because it's still delicious. I did it myself the other day out in Frederick. I'm Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570. Football, baseball, politics, music, fun, Merriweather, Alanis Morissette, Las Vegas, and crab cakes. We never stop talking Baltimore Positive.